Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Kesslering. And in this week's podcast, we welcome special guest Avinash Rugabur. Avinash is the president of electric vehicle company Arrival, which recently announced a business combination with SPAC CIIG merger at a $5.4 billion enterprise value. In today's episode, we discuss the process of going public through a special purpose acquisition company, Arrival's future growth opportunities in the market, what differentiates Arrival from some of its competitors, the investment case for Arrival, and more. So with no further ado, here's our chat with Arrival's Avinash Rugabur. Welcome to the Absolute Return Podcast, Avinash. Real pleasure to have you on the show today. Now, to kick things off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your role at Arrival?
Sure, and thanks for having me. So, yeah, my background, I started out as engineering, so heavy engineering focused, mechatronics and computer science. And I started my career at actually General Motors. So I've been in and out of the automotive industry for the last couple of decades. In between that, I've also done a couple of startups, so one in digital health and one which is a chocolate company, which is a story for another time. But I then joined GM's Silicon Valley office, where I was leading advanced technology activities. I actually had the $1 billion acquisition of Cruise, which helped kickstart a lot of the autonomous activity. And then supported a growing number of startups through my role there. And then I actually moved over to Cruise to lead strategy and M&A, where I oversaw acquisitions of multiple companies, helped devise strategy. And was also leading GM Cruise's next-gen vehicles. So I've been, really familiar with, let's say, both sides of the automotive landscape, technology side, but also then the business side. Since then, I met Dennis, the founder of Arrival, and I was just really blown away by what the company was doing. I'm sure we'll go through this in more detail, but it's really just transformed how automotive manufacturers design and produce vehicles. So I joined Arrival almost 2 years ago now, and working with got over 1,300 employees, founded in 2016, and just, we've been working on this mission to really transform how we produce, engineer, and design commercial EVs. So, and it's a really exciting moment for us, and as you're aware, we have announced that we will be going public, and so most important thing is we're bringing our vehicles and scaling our microfactories out over the next few years.
Yeah, super exciting time for Arrival in this going public transaction with CIIG Merger Corp. Now, if you could describe how that whole process came about, because clearly a massive jump for the company to go from the private market to the public market with a splash like you guys have done.
Yeah, so that was really great time. So, probably worth just a little bit of history. Prior to that, we've been in stealth. So we've been around since 2015, with just a real heavy focus on engineering. So out of our workforce, 90% are engineers, actually. And so we've been really developing a really strong technology and IP portfolio. And, we came out of stealth towards the end of last year with an investment from Hyundai and Kia, a motor company, and we also had an investment from UPS. And most recently, prior to going public, we also had an investment from BlackRock. So we had, we had a really strong investor base, strategic and financial. And when we're looking at, what's the strategy for the next few years, and what's the best way for us to, start to deploy these microfactories around the world. The technology is mature now. We're looking to bring products to market. And when we met the CIIG team, we really aligned on a couple of key points. One is they shared the same vision of where mobility was going to go, right? The future of electric, But more than that, we have to break the barriers of entry to electrify the fleet by, you know, really reducing the price premium that electric vehicles currently inhabit. And then secondly, you know, they brought things to the table that Arrival would really be helping utilizing in the future. So, you know, they've got a really strong background in running both public and private companies, growing and scaling them, brand development. And obviously, we bring a lot of the automotive and technology engineering along with that. So, you know, we went through a competitive process. We met multiple partners. What we really liked about CIAG was that they were also committed to staying with Arrival along this journey, which is going to be a long journey. So, you know, Peter Cuneo, the CEO of CIAG, is actually joining our board. And, you know, we've got a really strong relationship and, you know, working as one team through this.
That's interesting. You mentioned that it was a competitive process when looking to go public via a special purpose acquisition company. If you could describe in more detail sort of how that process came about, because clearly, there's a lot of interest in electric vehicle companies these days, and we've seen a number utilize the SPAC structure to go public. And clearly, with the performance of CIIG since the deal was announced, up, you know, almost threefold. Clearly, the market, you know, is very, very keen on Arrival as a public company. So if you could talk about, you know, how that process came to fruition, specifically with CIIG, and, you know, was it inbound? Did you talk to a couple dozen others? Or if you could provide us a bit more detail on that.
Yeah, we talked to quite a few, I would say. I think it was one of those things when we met CIIG, I think even after the first meeting we had with them, Dennis, the founder and CEO, and myself, we already knew that CIIG would be our partner. That's something like love at first sight. I think because of the alignment that I was discussing earlier, that was really critical to us because, you know, we've had a lot of good traction raising capital even prior to doing this. And you know, just to be clear, a lot of that is based on, you know, the deep technology that we've got. And we've also got, you know, a backlog of orders. And so for us, we were looking for, you know, not just the financial side of this, but also, you know, what could this partnership bring to the table? And that really was where CIIG shone. I mentioned that, you know, they're going to, you know, Peter's going to be part of the board. But also they're really even, you know, on a day-to-day, we're in constant communication. We're working together on, you know, what next year and the years after look like. So, you know, it was a competitive process, but I think once we met the right partner, we made a combination happen. And, you know, ultimately, even prior to SPAC, we were looking at multiple different avenues. And, you know, for us, it's slightly different, I would say, to, you know, what we're seeing in the rest of the industry. For us, it was, you know, when you look at our microfactory model, where we are, you know, instead of going through the traditional macro factory or gigafactory or, you know, even large traditional OEM factories, these are costing, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in capex, right? And then you're having to produce hundreds of thousands of vehicles to be profitable. But with our technology, we're able to deploy smaller factories that even if you were to multiply out, you know, to get them to compare them at similar volumes, they're less than half the price of a traditional factory. And they're about a tenth of the footprint. But even at the volumes we've got, so a microfactory can produce 10,000 vans or 1,000 buses, we're talking about, you know, numbers where, you know, CapEx is, you know, in the vicinity of around 45 million to deploy one of these microfactories. So when you look at our rollout and the financial requirements for us to hit profitability and to get our products out, we've just got a very different industry profile. And, you know, this made the most sense for us because it gave us the runway. You know, we're expecting about $660 million in total proceeds from the merger. And when we look at the, you know, the future 12 to 36 months of Arrival and as how we roll out the microfactories, just this was the best strategic option for us. So, you know, it was a, you know, as competitive as I mentioned, we found the right partner. And we were able to raise enough capital to execute our goals. So I think that, you know, that's why we went ahead with this.
I think that's an interesting point that you make when I think a lot of investors look at SPACs. They look at the special purpose acquisition company as simply just a shell for the target company to go public. But the way you're talking about the relationship and the ongoing involvement of the SPAC sponsor, it sounds like it's a lot more, as you say, a partnership than just, you know, a pile of cash, right? And so when you were looking at, you're kind of alluding to the decision making of really a traditional IPO versus this SPAC, more partnership where you find a long-term partner. What really put you over the edge choosing SPAC versus the traditional IPO? Was it that the amount of capital that could be raised perhaps wasn't as large with the traditional IPO? If you could just dive a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a few factors there, right? When you factor in a traditional IPO and the amount of cash that you can raise, obviously there was the EV market has been phenomenal in growth, but you know, there's a lot of uncertainty with COVID, et cetera, as well. There's a long time process to that. All of our diligence was done, you know, through third parties. We've got an OEM as an investor, you know, so, you know, really heavy diligence has been done on the company. And when we look at, to your point, what the cash that we could raise, but the fact that there is this partner that is bringing, you know, over 40 years of leadership experience across, you know, private and public companies, you know, they really understand what it takes to reimagine an entire industry. And that's really, you know, a critical part of this. And so it was just a firm foundation for us to draw, you know, strategic knowledge, operational expertise. We've got the, you know, technical capability and we've got folks that have come from the industry, veterans of the industry for production. So it was really just this alignment. And, you know, we were able to get to being a public company quicker with the same diligence, but we can fill our plans to scale the company a lot more rapidly. And because of our position of where we are in terms of, you know, we're on the cusp of, you know, we have prototype vehicles driving around already, both our bus and van. We've got a microfactory coming up in Bicester in the UK and Rock Hill, South Carolina. We just recently, yesterday, announced a new headquarters in North America in Charlotte. You know, we're in a position, I would say, of maturity. And a lot of that comes from, you know, deep technical capability as well. So, you know, we're not looking at this as a runway, you know, for years and years of R&D. For us, it was, okay, we're going to start scaling. We're going to start getting to production. We've got a partner that can help us grow. They bring a lot to the table. We have the necessary cash to do this. Let's make it happen.
So you mentioned you have prototypes, bus and van, the micro factories, new headquarters, and post closing of the going public transaction, you'll have access to $660 million of growth capital, which is significant. So what are Arrival's main growth initiatives beyond building micro factories? What sort of things are you guys planning to do on the product side specifically?
So we have four vehicle programs that are actually in development. And that's the bus. We have a van, and we also have a large van. And we have a small vehicle platform that's coming out in 2023. So these are all rolling out over the next three-odd years. What's important there is each of those vehicles share common technologies. So we have, you know, through our vertical integration, we've developed all of our own components. We select components to develop that can give us cost savings, that enable assembly through a microfactory. And also we select the components to design in-house, what I would say the ones that are smart, right? The ones that are connected and, you know, can measure your health or give data to the operators. So those components, like our battery module, for example, we've got the human-machine interface module. They can actually be swapped in and out and shared across vehicles. So, you know, our bus and our van share a lot of the same components, as will the small vehicle platform when we bring that to market. So a lot of the way you can think about Arrival is a lot of deep technology, a lot of deep micro technologies that come together to form any vehicle platform. We're starting with the bus and the van, and we're focused on the commercial vehicle segment. But it enables us, you know, to your point, as part of the how we'll deploy capital, it allows us to, you know, get those to production. It allows us to accelerate the deployment of the micro factories, and it allows us to really start to do that at scale globally. Because the beautiful thing about a micro factory is you don't need to stick it out in the middle of nowhere, but you can actually bring those micro factories close to the cities that they serve. So if you think about, you know, the CapEx profile of that micro factory and the fact that they can build the vehicles in our portfolio, then you can actually start to imagine, you know, the potential for the rollout of these micro factories as you're seeing governments around the world, and I would say, you know, corporations too with ESG goals, looking to shift the fleet over from, you know, fossil fuel to electric. That's public transportation. That's, you know, delivery vans. That's even, you know, even in some cases, you know, trucks, road cars, depending on where you are. So when you put all of that together, that's a real important time to strike the market. It is really now, as this shift is starting to happen. And being able to produce the vehicles right where they're going to serve, you know, you're starting to, you're employing local people, you're paying local taxes, and there's a sense of community in the product suite that we develop. You know, they're built and assembled and sold in the areas that they serve, and we can work with governments and corporations to design mobility systems that meet their needs. So a lot of that capital is really going to be deployed on, you know, product development and getting out these micro factories. You know, we expect to have around 31 micro factories in the next 3 years.
You mentioned Arrival's 1,300 employees, of which 90% are engineers. Clearly a large focus on technology, a focus on engineering. As we look into the increasingly competitive electric vehicle sector, how specifically does Arrival differentiate from some of these competitors, specifically if we look at, say, Tesla, which is obviously just a massive company, especially by market capitalization and access to capital and profile? You know, looking at some of your competitors, what sets you guys apart?
So, I mean, you know, first of all, on Tesla, what they've done for the industry is amazing, right? They've really shifted the mindset for people to understand that, you know, the future is electric. I would say that, you know, when it comes to what differentiates Arrival, we're the only ones who are vertically integrated to the level that we're developing all of these different layers in-house. So, you know, the software. So that's, you know, there's three layers of software that we develop. There's the, you know, the control level in-vehicle software that's really managing all of the components and the controls of that. We have the cloud-based software. So that's all of that data that goes to the cloud for operators to use. So, you know, think fleet management, vehicle health monitoring, those sorts of things that are really important for commercial, right? And obviously, that is one of the differentiators. We're going after an underserved commercial vehicle market, right? A lot of these customers, you know, they've had to buy a one-size-fits-all product for a long time. And when you're a OEM, it's hard to then go and, you know, really deploy all of that capital to the commercial vehicle market because it costs so much to do and costs so much to put a line in. And, you know, every time you're doing a change, it's hundreds of millions to $1 billion. Whereas for us, you know, we're able to do that just rapidly, and we can deploy these microfactories in 6 months, but that at that low capex. So we're able to focus in on the user experience of what these customers really need. And, you know, so going back to that differentiation, you know, we've got the software. The third level of that software is all in-house development tools. So we actually develop the tools that enable us to do all of the engineering more efficiently and more effectively. And then you've got the microfactories, which we've talked about. I'm sure we'll go in a little bit more. We have this very unique composite material. This composite material that we have is basically removes the need for a metal stamping plant and a paint shop. It's lighter and more durable than steel. And so it helps to reduce the total operating cost for the commercial vehicle operator. And when you're removing the metal stamping plant and the paint shop, these are really costly plants. And you're also able to shrink the footprint down, which is a key enabler for the microfactory. Then we have the components that we were mentioning earlier that get shared across the vehicle platform. We design and develop those in-house. And, you know, another important point of the components is you can actually upgrade them over time. So think about them, you know, when they combine with the software layer, think about them as plug and play. So what you're able to do is, you know, buy an asset, and then over time, let's say autonomy comes along in 5 to 10 years, full going, we can actually swap out, for example, the compute module with, you know, the latest one that enables that, and off we go. So, you know, when it comes to the vertical integration across the software, the composites, the composite materials, and the micro factories, you know, these are key differentiators. These are all in-house technologies that we have actually designed and developed. One last thing. All of that, you know, what's the point of doing all of that? The point of doing all of that is so that you can actually release an electric vehicle that is best in class. So, for example, our van, it's a, you know, 4-ton van, 2-ton unladen weight with a 2-ton payload. It has, you know, cargo volume that is best in class. So you're able to carry heavier payloads and larger boxes or packages. And you're able to do that with a battery modules that can be sized according to your needs, because the battery is the most expensive part of the electric vehicle. If you've got a vehicle that's doing under 100 miles, for example, you can actually size the battery for that. So you're saving the money instead of buying, you know, the traditional way, buying a full range vehicle and then sort of having to wear that cost. We can size it, you know, according to the needs. So you do all of this so that you can produce the vehicle at lower cost, which, and then you control the technology so you can reduce the cost at every point so that you can bring an electric vehicle to market that's at a competitive price with a fossil fuel equivalent. And when you add that to the lower total cost of ownership, that's when you see the shift across the full car park to being electric. And that is something that Arrival is enabling.
So something that you've talked quite a bit about is the micro factory approach. And can you speak a little bit as well to the genesis of that idea? And obviously you had mentioned your experience within the OEM industry and on the autonomous side as well, but really your team's in-depth expertise with legacy manufacturers. How did that flow into the microfactory approach? And was it really just identifying some of the gaps or the kind of, I guess, missing parts of the traditional manufacturing process?
Yeah. So what I would say about the skill base is, you know, we've got out of that 90% of engineers, about half are software engineers, and the other half are robotics and, you know, automotive engineers. So there's a blend across industries that really creates something special. Because if we keep doing things the way they're always done and then expect different results, you know, as Einstein said, it's the definition of insanity, right? So when we looked at this and we said, okay, we're going to go after the commercial vehicle segment, we've got to get the right price point, and we've got to get the best products we can. One of the key barriers is actually the production process itself. And, you know, since Henry Ford designed it, it hasn't really changed. It's been improved over, you know, many cycles, but it's essentially still the same. You deploy, you know, let's say $1 billion in CapEx. You run that as a line at one speed, and all of the operations happen on that line. So when we looked at that and we said, hey, the commercial vehicle segment needs the flexibility of different types of products at different volume runs. You know, if you do that with a traditional manufacturing process, you'll never be able to serve this segment. And that's what, you know, we found, right? It is an underserved segment. So why don't we take a look at the actual manufacturing process itself and transform that? You know, and that is a secret sauce. I mean, this makes us more efficient and flexible than anyone else on the market. To do that, we questioned everything. Why is it a line? Why is it this? Why is it that? We really myopically sort of broke it down. And so what we've come up with, instead of a production line, we have technology cells. And these technology cells each perform specific operations within the production process. So we then take autonomous mobile robots and we move the part into the cell where it performs an operation, and then we move it to another cell to perform another operation. So what you're doing there is creating a level of flexibility where, depending on what vehicle type you want to produce, you're simply rerouting the order of those operations that the cells do. And you can be much more flexible with that approach. And the cost is significantly lower. You know, we're using off-the-shelf robots to do this. To enable that, you actually have to then design the vehicle around that manufacturing process and not the other way around. We don't design the vehicle and then say, okay, go and figure out how to manufacture it. Okay, well, we know we're going to put a line, we're going to do this. And, you know, a lot of startups and traditional OEMs, as soon as they start sketching a vehicle, they either, you know, contract manufacturing to produce it, going and buying a plant, or amortizing an existing plant. And that forces you down a very specific vehicle development process. But for us, by breaking that whole paradigm apart and having these microfactories with these technology cells, we're then able to create the product around that. So that, you know, the composite material that I was mentioning is part of that process. You know, no metal stamping, no paint shop. You know, we can color the composite in the color we need. Then you have, you know, these technology, these components. These components are all designed to be assembled in a microfactory. So you've got a harmonious loop between every part of the vehicle. The skateboard platform, same thing. We only use, you know, extrusions and castings. We don't use welding, for example. And we've got bonding, gluing, and other processes to cover the structural goals. And so you're starting to question all of the traditional approach, and you're creating something new designed around the objective of making sure we get these best-in-class products at the right price point. So that's really a harmonious loop between every bit of technology that we design and develop, that vertical integration. It's in sync with what the microfactory can do. You can't just take an existing vehicle and say, hey, let me just go build this in a small factory. It just won't work. You know, what we've done is managed to break that economies of scale that's been a barrier to entry for the industry for so long.
So there's a lot of investor interest in the electric vehicle sector from the top down. The macro story is very clear. It's where customers and the industry is moving, getting away from internal combustion engine and to electric powered vehicles. Now, you mentioned Arrival specifically, deep technology for a competitive advantage, vertical integrated nature, the microfactories, and certain, you know, features that your products have. Now, from an investor's perspective, there's more and more electric vehicles and some of your competitors as options in the market to invest in. What sets Arrival apart, and what is the investment pitch for Arrival specifically?
So I've covered the microfactory. So, you know, essentially what's important about the microfactory, though, is we're able to scale more rapidly because we can deploy them in 6 months and it costs us less capex to do so. Then you also are able to produce vehicles at a lower cost. So that really what you're talking about there is the ability to scale quickly. And also it gives you more flexibility for changing vehicle types over time. So this is an important aspect to the scaling factor of Arrival. When you think of having to produce hundreds of thousands of vehicles at low margin to really get the return on investment, you're walking a tightrope if the industry changes. And we've seen that in the, let's say, the long time it's taking the traditional approach to react to electrification, right? There's things that are inbuilt into that system that stops you from being that flexible. The microfactories give us that flexibility to scale production rapidly, but also really bring out different vehicle types at any volume, which is something, again, the industry hasn't seen. The proprietary tech, what that lets us do is control our costs and have unit economics that enable high-margin vehicles, but then they're still price competitive and offer a lower total cost of ownership to fossil fuel equivalents and any other electric vehicle competitor. And then if you take that and then you look at the order backlog, you know, we've got orders from UPS, for example, for 10,000 vehicles with the options of 10,000 more. We're in late stage sales with a variety of different customers. Because the product itself, you know, has the right attributes and the right price point, you know, I think, one of the interests from investors is that, you know, you have this low capex model, you have a deep IP portfolio, you know, we've got over 180 patents across all of these technologies. And then you've got a product that customers are interested in, and you can scale all of that rapidly. I think that's really what you're seeing is the investment. I mean, I don't even want to say it's a pitch. It's the reality of what Arrival is doing and what its new method enables that is really unique, I think, to the industry.
So to summarize, you guys can scale rapidly. You got this proprietary technology that leads to efficiency and profitability, which is super important in manufacturing vehicles, in addition to the flexibility from the micro factory. So certainly a very interesting value proposition for investors. Now, before we wrap things up today, Avinash, where can investors learn more?
So we will be, obviously they can reach out directly through our website. We'll be doing the investor roadshow shortly as well. We're looking to close the transaction early next year as well in terms of the business combination. So absolutely. Investors are free to reach out and we're happy to have those discussions.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Absolute Return podcast, Avinash. It was a real pleasure. Wish you all the best in the merger with CIIG and the future public market interactions. You mentioned the transaction closing early 2021, so investors can look forward to that. And yeah, thanks so much. Wish you all the best and hope you have a great day.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks so much. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.